Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Chapter 7 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 7. The Forest of Gugu. In the central western part of the Gilliken country is a great tangle of trees called Gugu Forest. It is the biggest forest in all Oz, and stretches miles and miles in every direction, north, south, east, and west. Adjoining it on the east side is a range of rugged mountains covered with underbrush and small twisted trees. You can find this place by looking at the map of the Land of Oz. Gugu Forest is the home of most of the wild beasts that inhabit Oz. These are seldom disturbed in their leafy haunts, because there is no reason why the Oz people should go there except on rare occasions, and most parts of the forest have never been seen by any eyes but the eyes of the beasts who make their home there. The biggest beasts inhabit the great forest, while these smaller ones live mostly in the mountain underbrush at the east. Now, you must know that there are laws in the forests, as well as in every other place, and these laws are made by the beasts themselves, and are necessary to keep them from fighting and tearing one another to pieces. In the Gugu Forest there is a king, an enormous yellow leopard called Gugu, after whom the forest is named. And this king has three other beasts to advise him in keeping the laws and maintaining order: Bru the Bear, Lou the Unicorn, and Rango the Gray Ape, who are known as the king's counselors. All these are fierce and ferocious beasts, and hold their high offices because they are more intelligent and more feared than their fellows. Since Oz became a fairyland, no man, woman, or child ever dies in that land, nor is anyone ever sick. Likewise, the beasts of the forest never die, so that long years add to their cunning and wisdom, as well as to their size and strength. It is possible for beasts, or even people, to be destroyed, but the task is so difficult that it is seldom attempted. Because it is free from sickness and death is one reason why Oz is a fairyland, but it is doubtful whether those who come to Oz from the outside world, as Dorothy and Button-Bright and Trot and Cap'n Bill and the Wizard did, will live forever or cannot be injured. Even Ozma is not sure about this, and so the guests of Ozma from other lands are always carefully protected from any danger so as to be on the safe side. In spite of the laws of the forests, there are often fights among the beasts. Some of them have lost an eye or an ear, or even had a leg torn off. The king and the king's counselors always punish those who start a fight, but so fierce is the nature of some beasts that they will at times fight in spite of laws and punishment. Over this vast wild forest of Gugu flew two eagles one morning, and near the center of the jungle the eagles alighted on a branch of a tall tree. "Here is the place for us to begin our work," said one, who was Ruggedo the gnome. "Do many beasts live here, asked Kiki-Aru, the other eagle.
"The forest is full of them," said the gnome. "There are enough beasts right here to enable us to conquer the people of Oz if we can get them to consent to join us. To do that, we must go among them and tell them our plans, so we must now decide on what shapes we had better assume while in the forest."
"I suppose we must take the shape of beasts," said Kiki.
"Of course, but that requires some thought. All kinds of beasts live here, and a yellow leopard is king. If we became leopards, the king will be jealous of us. If we take the forms of some of the other beasts, we shall not command proper respect."
"I wonder if the beasts will attack us?" asked Kiki.
"I'm a gnome and immortal, so nothing can hurt me," replied Ruggedo.
"I was born in the Land of Oz, so nothing can hurt me," said Kiki.
"But in order to carry out our plans, we must win the favor of all the animals of the forest."
"Then what shall we do?" asked Kiki.
"Let us mix the shapes of several beasts, so we will not look like any one of them," proposed the wily old gnome. "Let us have the heads of lions, the bodies of monkeys, the wings of eagles, and the tails of wild asses, with knobs of gold on the end of them instead of bunches of hair."
"Won't that make a queer combination?" inquired Kiki.
"The queerer the better," declared Ruggedo.
"All right," said Kiki. "You stay here, and I'll fly away to another tree and transform us both. And then we'll climb down our trees and meet in the forest."
"No," said the gnome. "We mustn't separate. You must transform us while we are together."
"I won't do that," asserted Kiki firmly. "You're trying to get my secret, and I won't let you." The eyes of the other eagle flashed angrily, but Ruggedo did not dare insist. If he offended this boy, he might have to remain an eagle always, and he wouldn't like that. Some day he hoped to be able to learn the secret word of the magical transformations, but just now he must let Kiki have his own way.
"All right," he said gruffly. "Do as you please."
So Kiki flew to a tree that was far enough distant so that Ruggedo could not overhear him, and said, "I want Ruggedo the gnome and myself to have the heads of lions, the bodies of monkeys, the wings of eagles, and the tails of wild asses, with knobs of gold on the ends of them instead of bunches of hair. Pirzqxgl." He pronounced the magic word in the proper manner, and at once his form changed to the one he had described. He spread his eagle's wings, and finding they were strong enough to support his monkey body and lion head, he flew swiftly to the tree where he had left Ruggedo. The gnome was also transformed, and was climbing down the tree because the branches all around him were so thickly entwined that there was no room between them to fly. Kiki quickly joined his comrade, and it did not take them long to reach the ground. End of chapter 7.
Chapter 8 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 8. The Li Mong Eags Make Trouble. There had been trouble in the forest of Gugu that morning. Chippo, the wild boar, had bitten the tail off Arx, the giraffe, while the latter had his head among the leaves of a tree eating his breakfast. Arx kicked with his heels and struck Trip, the great kangaroo, who had a new baby in her pouch. Trip knew it was the wild boar's fault, so she knocked him over with one powerful blow, and then ran away to escape Chippo's sharp tusks. In the chase that followed, a giant porcupine stuck 50 sharp quills into the boar, and a chimpanzee in a tree threw a coconut at the porcupine that jammed its head into its body. All this was against the laws of the forest, and when the excitement was over, Gugu the Leopard King called his royal counselors together to decide how best to punish the offenders. The four lords of the forest were holding solemn council in a small clearing when they saw two strange beasts approaching them, beasts the like of which they had never seen before. Not one of the four, however, relaxed his dignity or showed by a movement that he was startled. The great leopard crouched at full length upon a fallen tree trunk. Bru the bear sat on his haunches before the king. Rango the gray ape stood with his muscular arms folded, and Lu the unicorn reclined, much as a horse does, between his fellow counselors. With one consent they remained silent, eyeing with steadfast looks the intruders who were making their way into their forest domain. "Well met, brothers," said one of the strange beasts, coming to a halt beside the group, while his comrade with hesitation lagged behind. "We are not brothers," returned the gray ape sternly. "Who are you, and how came you to the forest of Gugu?"
"We are two Limon-Eags," said Ruggedo, inventing the name. "Our home is in the Sky Island, and we have come to Earth to warn the forest beasts that the people of Oz are about to make war upon them and enslave them, so that they will become beasts of burden forever after, and obey only the will of their two-legged masters." A low roar of anger arose from the council of beasts.
"Who's going to do that?" asked Lu the unicorn, in a high squeaky voice, at the same time rising to his feet.
"The people of Oz," said Ruggedo.
"But what will we be doing?" inquired the unicorn.
"That's what I've come to talk to you about."
"You needn't talk. We'll fight the Oz people," screamed the unicorn. "We'll smash 'em. We'll trample 'em. We'll gore 'em. We'll—"
"Silence!" growled Gugu the king, and Lu obeyed, although still trembling with wrath. The cold, steady gaze of the leopard wandered over the two strange beasts.
"The people of Oz," said he, "have not been our friends. They have not been our enemies. They have let us alone, and we have let them alone. There is no reason for a war between us. They have no slaves. They could not use us as slaves if they should conquer us.
I think you are telling us lies, you strange Limon-Eag, you mixed-up beasts who are neither one thing nor another."
"Oh, on my word, it's the truth," protested the gnome in the beast's shape. "I wouldn't lie for the world. I—"
"Silence!"
again growled Gugu the king, and somehow even Ruggedo was abashed and obeyed the edict.
"What do you say, Bru?" asked the king, turning to the great bear who had until now said nothing.
"How does the mixed beast know that what he says is true?" asked the bear.
"Why, I can fly, you know, having the wings of an eagle," explained the gnome. "I and my comrade yonder," turning to Kiki, "flew to a grove in Oz, and there we heard the people telling how they would make many ropes to snare you beasts, and then they will surround this forest and all other forests and make you prisoners. So we came here to warn you, for being beasts ourselves, although we live in the sky, we are your friends."
The leopard's lip curled and showed his enormous teeth, sharp as needles. He turned to the gray ape.
"What do you think, Rango?" he asked.
"Send these mixed beasts away, your majesty," replied the gray ape. "They are mischief-makers."
"Don't do that! Don't do that!" cried the unicorn nervously. "The stranger said he would tell us what to do.
Let him tell us, then. Are we fools not to heed a warning?
Gugu the king turned to Ruggedo. Speak, stranger, he commanded.
Well, said the gnome, it's this way. The land of Oz is a fine country. The people of Oz have many good things, homes with soft beds, all sorts of nice-tasting food, pretty clothes, lovely jewels, and many other things that beasts know nothing of. Here in the dark forests, the poor beasts have hard work to get enough to eat and to find a bed to rest in. But the beasts are better than the people, and why should they not have all the good things the people have? So I propose that before the Oz people have the time to make all those ropes to snare you with, that all we beasts get together and march against the Oz people and capture them. Then the beasts will become the masters, and the people their slaves.
What good would that do us? Asked Bru the bear.
It would save you from slavery, for one thing, and you could enjoy all the fine things that Oz people have.
Beasts wouldn't know what to do with the things people use, said the gray ape.
But this is only part of my plan, insisted the gnome. Listen to the rest of it. We two Lyman Eags are powerful magicians. When you have conquered the Oz people, we will transform them all into beasts and send them to the forest to live. And we will transform all the beasts into people so they can enjoy all the wonderful delights of the Emerald City. For a moment no beast spoke. Then the king said,
Prove it.
Prove what? Asked Ruggedo. Prove that you can transform us. If you are a magician, transform the unicorn into a man. Then we will believe you. If you fail, we will destroy you. All right, said the gnome, but I'm tired, so I'll let my comrade make the transformation. Kiki Aru had stood back from the circle, but he had heard all that was said. He now realized that he must make good Ruggedo's boast. So he retreated to the edge of the clearing and whispered the magic word. Instantly, the unicorn became a fat, chubby little man, dressed in the purple Gillikin costume, and it was hard to tell which was the more astonished, the king, the bear, the ape, or the former unicorn.
"It's true!" shouted the man-beast. "Good gracious! Look what I am! It's wonderful!"
The king of beasts now addressed Ruggedo in a more friendly tone. "We must believe your story, since you have given us proof of your power," said he. "But why, if you are so great a magician, cannot you conquer the Oz people without our help, and so save us the trouble?"
"Alas," replied the crafty old gnome, "no magician is able to do everything. The transformations are easy to us, because we are Lyman-Eags, but we cannot fight or conquer even such weak creatures as the Oz people. But we will stay with you and advise and help you, and we will transform all the Oz people into beasts, when the time comes, and all the beasts into people."
Gugu the king turned to his counselors. "How shall we answer this friendly stranger?" he asked. Lou, the former unicorn, was dancing around and cutting capers like a clown.
"On my word, your majesty," he said, "this being a man is more fun than being a unicorn."
"You look like a fool," said the gray ape.
"Well, I feel fine," declared the man-beast.
"I think I prefer being a bear," said Big Bru. "I was born a bear, and I know a bear's ways, so I'm satisfied to live as a bear lives."
"That," said the old gnome, "is because you know nothing better. When we have conquered the Oz people and you become a man, you'll be glad of it.
The immense leopard rested his chin on the log and seemed thoughtful.
"The beasts of the forest must decide this matter for themselves," he said. "Go you, Rango the Gray Ape, and tell your monkey tribe to order all the forest beasts to assemble in the great clearing at sunrise tomorrow. When we are all gathered together, this mixed-up beast, who is a magician, shall talk to them and tell them what he has told us. Then, if they decide to fight the Oz people who have declared war on us, I will lead the beasts to battle." Rango the Gray Ape turned at once and glided swiftly through the forest on his mission. The bear gave a grunt and walked away. Gugu the king rose and stretched himself. Then he said to Ruggedo, "Meet us at sunrise tomorrow," and with stately stride vanished among the trees. The man-unicorn, left alone with the strangers, suddenly stopped his foolish prancing.
"You'd better make me a unicorn again," he said. "I like being a man, but the forest beasts won't know I'm their friend Loo, and they might tear me to pieces before morning."
So Kiki changed him back to his former shape, and the unicorn departed to join his people. Ruggedo the gnome was much pleased with his success.
"Tomorrow," he said to Kiki Aru, "we'll win over these beasts and set them to fight and conquer the Oz people. Then I will have my revenge on Ozma and Dorothy and all the rest of my enemies."
"But I am doing all the work," said Kiki.
"Never mind. You're going to be King of Oz," promised Ruggedo.
"Will the big leopard let me be king?" asked the boy anxiously.
The gnome came close to him and whispered,
"If Gugu the leopard opposes us, you will transform him into a tree, and then he will be helpless."
"Of course," agreed Kiki, and he said to himself, "I shall also transform this deceitful gnome into a tree, for he lies, and I cannot trust him."
End of chapter 8.
Chapter 9 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 9. The Isle of the Magic Flower. The Glass Cat was a good guide, and led Trot and Cap'n Bill by straight and easy paths through all the settled part of the Munchkin Country, and then into the north section where there were few houses, and finally through a wild country where there were no houses or paths at all. But the walking was not difficult, and at last they came to the edge of a forest and stopped there to make camp and sleep until morning. From branches of trees Cap'n Bill made a tiny house that was just big enough for the little girl to crawl into and lie down. But first they ate some food that Trot had carried in the basket.
"Don't you want some, too?" she asked the Glass Cat.
"No,"
answered the creature.
"I suppose you'll hunt around and catch a mouse," remarked Cap'n Bill.
"Me? Catch a mouse? Why should I do that?" inquired the Glass Cat.
"Well, then you could eat it," said the sailor man.
"I beg to inform you," returned the crystal tabby, "that I do not eat mice. Being transparent, so anyone can see through me, I'd look nice, wouldn't I, with a common mouse inside me? But the fact is that I haven't any stomach or other machinery that would permit me to eat things. The careless magician who made me didn't think I'd need to eat, I suppose."
"Don't you ever get hungry or thirsty?" asked Trot.
"Never. I don't complain, you know, at the way I'm made, for I've never yet seen any living thing as beautiful as I am. I have the handsomest brains in the world. They're pink, and you can see 'em work."
"I wonder," said Trot thoughtfully, as she ate her bread and jam, "if my brains whirl around in the same way yours do."
"No, not the same way, surely," returned the Glass Cat.
for in that case they'd be as good as my brains, except that they're hidden under a thick, bony skull.
Brains, remarked Cap'n Bill, is of all kinds and work different ways. But I've noticed that them as think their brains is best is often mistook.
Trot was a little disturbed by sounds from the forest that night, for many beasts seemed prowling among the trees. But she was confident Cap'n Bill would protect her from harm, and in fact no beast ventured from the forest to attack them.
At daybreak they were up again, and after a simple breakfast, Cap'n Bill said to the Glass Cat,
"Up anchor, mate, and let's forge ahead. I don't suppose we're far from that magic flower, are we?"
"Not far," answered the transparent one, as it led the way into the forest. "But it may take you some time to get to it."
Before long they reached the bank of a river. It was not very wide at this place, but as they followed the bank in a northerly direction, it gradually broadened. Suddenly the blue-green leaves of the trees changed to a purple hue, and Trot noticed this and said,
"I wonder what makes the colors change like that. It is because we have left the Munchkin country and entered the Killikin country," explained the Glass Cat, "and it's a sign our journey is nearly ended."
The river made a sudden turn, and after the travelers had passed around the bend, they saw that the stream had now become as broad as a small lake, and in the center of the lake they beheld a little island, not more than 50 feet in extent either way. Something glittered in the middle of this tiny island, and the Glass Cat paused on the bank and said,
"There is the gold flower-pot containing the magic flower, which is very curious and beautiful. If you can get to the island, your task is ended, except to carry the thing home with you."
Cap'n Bill looked at the broad expanse of water and began to whistle a low, quavering tune. Trot knew that the whistle meant that Cap'n Bill was thinking, and the old sailor didn't look at the island as much as he looked at the trees upon the bank where they stood. Presently he took from the big pocket of his coat an axe blade wound in an old cloth to keep the sharp edge from cutting his clothing. Then with a large pocket knife he cut a small limb from a tree and whittled it into a handle for his axe.
"Sit down, Trot," he advised the girl as he worked. "I've got quite a job ahead of me now, for I've got to build us a raft."
"What do we need a raft for, Cap'n?"
"Why, to take us to the island. We can't walk under water in the river bed as the Glass Cat did, so we must float atop the water."
"Can you make a raft, Cap'n Bill?"
"Of course, Trot, if you give me time."
The little girl sat down on a log and gazed at the island of the magic flower. Nothing seemed to grow on the tiny isle. There was no tree, no shrub, no grass even, as far as she could make out from that distance. But the gold pot glittered in the rays of the sun, and Trot could catch glimpses of glowing colors above it as the magic flower changed from one sort to another.
"When I was here before," remarked the Glass Cat, lazily reclining at the girl's feet, "I saw two Kalidas on this very bank where they had come to drink."
"What are Kalidas?" asked the girl.
"The most powerful and ferocious beasts in all Oz. This forest is their especial home, and so there are few other beasts to be found except monkeys. The monkeys are spry enough to keep out of the way of the fierce Kalidas, which attack all other animals and often fight among themselves."
"Did they try to fight you when you saw 'em?" asked Trot, getting very much excited.
"Yes, they sprang upon me in an instant, but I lay flat on the ground so I wouldn't get my legs broken by the great weight of the beasts. And when they tried to bite me, I laughed at them and jeered them until they were frantic with rage, for they nearly broke their teeth on my hard glass. So after a time they discovered they could not hurt me and went away. It was great fun.
I hope they don't come here again to drink, not while we're here anyhow," returned the girl,
for I'm not made of glass, nor is Cap'n Bill. And if those bad beasts bit us, we'd get hurt." Cap'n Bill was cutting from the trees some long stakes, making them sharp at one end and leaving a crotch at the other end. These were to bind the logs of his raft together. He had fashioned several and was just finishing another, when the Glass Cat cried, "Look out! There's a Kalida coming toward us!" Trot jumped up, greatly frightened, and looked at the terrible animal, as if fascinated by their fierce eyes, for the Kalida was looking at her too, and its look wasn't at all friendly. But Cap'n Bill called to her, "Wade into the river, Trot, up to your knees, and stay there," and she obeyed him at once. The sailor man hobbled forward, the stake in one hand and his axe in the other, and got between the girl and the beast, which sprang upon him with a growl of defiance. Cap'n Bill moved pretty slowly sometimes, but now he was quick as could be. As the Kalida sprang toward him, he stuck out his wooden leg, and the point of it struck the beast between the eyes and sent it rolling upon the ground. Before it could get upon its feet again, the sailor pushed the sharp stake right through its body, and then with the flat side of the axe he hammered the stake as far into the ground as it would go. By this means he captured the great beast and made it harmless, for try as it would, it could not get away from the stake that held it. Cap'n Bill knew he could not kill the Kalida, for no living thing in Oz can be killed, so he stood back and watched the beast wriggle and growl and paw the earth with its sharp claws, and then, satisfied it could not escape, he told Trot to come out of the water again and try her wet shoes and stockings in the sun. "Are you sure he can't get away?" she asked.
"I'd bet a cookie on it," said Cap'n Bill.
So Trot came ashore and took off her shoes and stockings and laid them on the log to dry, while the sailor man resumed his work on the raft. The Kalida, realizing after many struggles that it could not escape, now became quiet, but it said in a harsh, snarling voice,
"I suppose you think you're clever to pin me to the ground in this manner? But when my friends, the other Kalidas, come here, they'll tear you to pieces for treating me this way."
"Perhaps," remarked Cap'n Bill coolly, as he chopped at the logs, "and perhaps not. When are your folks coming here?"
"I don't know," admitted the Kalida. "But when they do come, you can't escape them."
"If they hold off long enough, I'll have my raft ready," said Cap'n Bill.
"What are you going to do with a raft?" inquired the beast.
"We're going over to that island to get the magic flower."
The large beast looked at him in surprise a moment, and then it began to laugh. The laugh was a good deal like a roar, and it had a cruel and derisive sound, but it was a laugh nevertheless.
"Good," said the Kalida. "Good, very good. I'm glad you're going to get the magic flower. But what will you do with it?"
"We're going to take it to Ozma as a present on her birthday."
The Kalida laughed again. Then it became sober.
"If you get to the land on your raft before my people can catch you," it said, "you will be safe from us. We can swim like ducks, so the girl couldn't have escaped me by getting into the water. But Kalidas don't go to that island over there."
"Why not?" asked Trot. The beast was silent.
"Tell us the reason," urged Cap'n Bill.
"Well, it's the Isle of the Magic Flower," answered the Kalida, "and we don't care much for magic. If you hadn't had a magic leg instead of a meat one, you couldn't have knocked me over so easily and stuck this wooden pin through me."
"I've been to the Magic Isle,"
said the Glass Cat, "and I've watched the magic flower bloom, and I'm sure it's too pretty to be left in that lonely place, where only beasts prowl around it and no else sees it. So we're going to take it to the Emerald City."
"I don't care," the beast replied in a surly tone. "We Kalidas would be just as contented if there wasn't a flower in our forest. What good are the things, anyhow?"
"You don't like pretty things?" asked Trot.
"No."
"You ought to admire my pink brains, anyhow," declared the Glass Cat. "They're beautiful, and you can see 'em work."
The beast only growled in reply, and Cap'n Bill, having now cut all his logs to a proper size, began to roll them to the water's edge and fasten them together. End of chapter 9.
Chapter 10 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 10. Stuck Fast. The day was nearly gone when at last the raft was ready.
"It ain't so very big," said the old sailor, "but I don't weigh much, and you, Trot, don't weigh half as much as I do, and the Glass Pussy don't count."
"But it's safe, isn't it?" inquired the girl.
"Yes, it's good enough to carry us to the island and back again, and that's about all we can expect of it."
Saying this, Cap'n Bill pushed the raft into the water, and when it was afloat, stepped upon it and held out his hand to Trot, who quickly followed him. The Glass Cat boarded the raft last of all. The sailor had cut a long pole and had whittled a flat paddle, and with these he easily propelled the raft across the river. As they approached the island, the wonderful flower became more plainly visible, and they quickly decided that the Glass Cat had not praised it too highly. The colors of the flowers that bloomed in quick succession were strikingly bright and beautiful, and the shapes of the blossoms were varied and curious. Indeed, they did not resemble ordinary flowers at all. So intently did Trot and Cap'n Bill gaze upon the golden flower pot that held the magic flower that they scarcely noticed the island itself until the raft reached upon its sands. But then the girl exclaimed,
"How funny it is, Cap'n Bill, that nothing else grows here except the magic flower."
Then the sailor glanced at the island and saw that it was all bare ground, without a weed, a stone, or a blade of grass. Trot, eager to examine the flower closer, sprang from the raft and ran up the bank until she reached the golden flower pot. Then she stood beside it, motionless and filled with wonder. Cap'n Bill joined her, coming more leisurely, and he, too, stood in silent admiration for a time.
"Ozma will like this," remarked the Glass Cat, sitting down to watch the shifting hues of the flowers. "I'm sure she won't have as fine a birthday present from anyone else."
"Do you suppose it's very heavy, Cap'n? And can we get it home without breaking it?" asked Trot anxiously.
"Well, I've lifted many bigger things than that," he replied. "But let's see what it weighs."
He tried to take a step forward, but he could not lift his meat foot from the ground. His wooden leg seemed free enough, but the other would not budge.
"I seem stuck, Trot," he said with a perplexed look at his foot. "It ain't mud, and it ain't glue, but something's holding me down."
The girl attempted to lift her own feet to get nearer to her friend, but the ground held them as fast as it held Cap'n Bill's foot. She tried to slide them or to twist them around, but it was no use. She could not move either foot a hair's breadth.
"This is funny," she exclaimed. "What do you suppose has happened to us, Cap'n Bill?"
"I'm trying to make out," he answered. "Take off your shoes, Trot. Perhaps it's the leather soles that stuck to the ground."
She leaned down and unlaced her shoes, but found she could not pull her feet out of them. The Glass Cat, which was walking around naturally as ever, now said,
"Your foot has got roots to it, Cap'n, and I can see the roots going into the ground, where they spread out in all directions. It's the same way with Trot. That's why you can't move. The roots hold you fast."
Cap'n Bill was rather fat and couldn't see his own feet very well, but he squatted down and examined Trot's feet and decided that the Glass Cat was right.
"This is hard luck,"
he declared in a voice that showed he was uneasy at the discovery.
"We're prisoners, Trot, on this funny island, and I'd like to know how we're ever going to get loose so's we can get home again."
"Now I know why the Kalida laughed at us," said the girl, "and why he said none of the beasts ever come to this island. The horrid creature knew we'd be caught and wouldn't warn us."
In the meantime, the Kalida, although pinned fast to the earth by Cap'n Bill's stake, was facing the island, and now the ugly expression which passed over its face when it defied and sneered at Cap'n Bill and Trot had changed to one of amusement and curiosity. When it saw the adventurers had actually reached the island and were standing beside the magic flower, it heaved a breath of satisfaction, a long, deep breath that swelled its deep chest until the beast could feel the stake that held him move a little, as if withdrawing itself from the ground.
"Ha-ha!" murmured the Kalida. "A little more of this will set me free and allow me to escape."
So he began breathing as hard as he could, puffing out his chest as much as possible with each indrawing breath, and by doing this he managed to raise the stake with each powerful breath, until at last the Kalida, using the muscles of his four legs as well as his deep breaths, found itself free of the sandy soil. The stake was sticking right through him, however, so he found a rock deeply set in the bank and pressed the sharp point of the stake into the surface of this rock until he had driven it clear through his body. Then, by getting the stake tangled among some thorny bushes and wriggling his body, he managed to draw it out altogether.
"There!" he exclaimed. "Except for those two holes in me, I'm as good as ever. But I must admit that that old wooden-legged fellow saved both himself and the girl by making me a prisoner." Now the Kalida, although the most disagreeable creatures in the Land of Oz, were nevertheless magical inhabitants of a magical fairyland, and in their natures a certain amount of good was mingled with the evil. This one was not very revengeful, and now that his late foes were in danger of perishing, his anger against them faded away.
"Our own Kalida King," he reflected, "has certain magical powers of his own. Perhaps he knows how to fill up these two holes in my body."
So, without paying any more attention to Trot and Cap'n Bill than they were paying to him, he entered the forest and trotted along a secret path that led to the hidden lair of all the Kalidas. While the Kalida was making good its escape, Cap'n Bill took his pipe from his pocket and filled it with tobacco and lighted it. Then, as he puffed out the smoke, he tried to think what could be done.
"The Glass Cat seems all right," he said, "and my wooden leg didn't take roots and grow either, so it's only flesh that gets caught."
"It's magic that does it, Captain."
"I know, Trot, and that's what sticks me. We're living in a magic country, but neither of us knows any magic, and so we can't help ourselves."
"Couldn't the Wizard of Oz help us, or Glinda the Good?" asked the little girl.
"Ah, now we're beginning to reason," he answered. "I'd probably thought of that myself in a minute more. By good luck, the Glass Cat is free, and so it can run back to the Emerald City and tell the wizard about our fix and ask him to come and help us get home."
"Will you go?" Trot asked the cat, speaking very earnestly.
"I'm no messenger to be sent here and there," asserted the curious animal in a sulky tone of voice.
"Well," said Cap'n Bill, "you've got to go home anyhow, 'cause you don't want to stay here, I take it. And when you get home, it shouldn't worry you too much to tell the wizard what's happened to us."
"That's true," said the cat, sitting on its haunches and lazily washing its face with one glass paw. "I don't mind telling the wizard when I get home."
"Won't you go now?" pleaded Trot. "We don't want to stay here any longer than we can help. Everybody in Oz will be interested in you, and call you a hero, and say nice things about you because you helped your friends out of trouble."
That was the best way to manage the Glass Cat, which was so vain that it loved to be praised.
"I'm going home right away," said the creature, "and I'll tell the wizard to come and help you."
Saying this, it walked down to the water and disappeared under the surface. Not being able to manage the raft alone, the Glass Cat walked on the bottom of the river as it had done when it visited the island before, and soon they saw it appear on the farther bank and trot into the forest, where it was quickly lost to sight among the trees. Then Trot heaved a deep sigh.
"Ah, Cap'n," said she, "we're in a bad fix. There's nothing here to eat, and we can't even lie down to sleep. Unless the Glass Cat hurries, and the wizard hurries, I don't know what's going to become of us."
End of chapter 10. Chapter 11 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 11. The Beasts of the Forest of Gugu. That was a wonderful gathering of wild animals in the Forest of Gugu next sunrise. Rango the Gray Ape had even called his monkey sentinels away from the forest edge, and every beast, little and big, was in the great clearing where meetings were held on occasions of great importance. In the center of the clearing stood a great shelving rock having a flat, inclined surface, and on this sat the stately leopard Gugu, who was king of the forest. On the ground beneath him squatted Bru the bear,
Lou
the unicorn, and Rango the gray ape, the king's three counselors. And in front of them stood the two strange beasts, who had called themselves Li-Mong-Eags, but were really the transformations of Ruggedo the gnome and Kiki-Aru the high-up. Then came the beasts, rows and rows and rows of them. The smallest beasts were nearest the king's rock throne. Then there were wolves and foxes, lynxes and hyenas and the like. Behind them were gathered the monkey tribes, who were hard to keep in order because they teased the other animals and were full of mischievous tricks. Back of the monkeys were the pumas, jaguars, tigers, and lions and their kind. Next the bears, all sizes and colors. After them the bisons, wild asses, zebras, and unicorns. Farther on the rhinoceri and hippopotami, and at the far edge of the forest, close to the trees that shut in the clearing, was a row of thick-skinned elephants, still as statues, but with eyes bright and intelligent. Many other kinds of beasts, too numerous to mention, were there, and some were unlike any beasts we see in the menageries and zoos in our country. Some were from the mountains west of the forest, and some from the plains at the east, and some from the river. But all present acknowledged the leadership of Gugu, who for many years had ruled them wisely and forced all to obey the laws. When the beasts had taken their places in the clearing and the rising sun was shooting its first bright rays over the treetops, King Gugu rose on his throne. The leopard's giant form, towering above all the others, caused a sudden hush to fall on the assemblage. "Brothers," he said in his deep voice, "a stranger has come among us, a beast of curious form, who is a great magician and is able to change the shapes of men or beasts at his will. This stranger has come to us, with another of his kind, from out of the sky, to warn us of a danger which threatens us all, and to offer us a way to escape from that danger. He says he is our friend, and he has proved to me and to my counselors his magic powers. Will you listen to what he has to say to you, to the message he has brought from the sky?
Let him speak!
Came in a great roar from the great company of assembled beasts. So Ruggedo the gnome sprang upon the flat rock beside Gugu the king, and another roar, gentle this time, showed how astonished the beasts were at the sight of his curious form. His lion's face was surrounded by a mane of pure white hair. His eagle's wings were attached to the shoulders of his monkey body, and were so long that they nearly touched the ground. He had powerful arms and legs in addition to the wings, and at the end of his long, strong tail was a golden ball. Never had any beast beheld such a curious creature before, and so the very sight of the stranger, who was said to be a great magician, filled all present with awe and wonder. Kiki stayed down below, and, half hidden by the shelf of rock, was scarcely noticed. The boy realized that the old gnome was helpless without his magic power, but he also realized that Ruggedo was the best talker, so he was willing the gnome should take the lead.
"Beasts of the forest of Gugu," began Ruggedo the gnome, "my comrade and I are your friends. We are magicians, and from our home in the sky we can look down into the land of Oz and see everything that is going on. Also we can hear what the people below us are saying. That is how we heard Ozma, who rules the land of Oz, say to her people, 'The beasts of the forest of Gugu are lazy and are of no use to us. Let us go to their forest and make them all our prisoners. Let us tie them with ropes and beat them with sticks until they work for us and become our willing slaves.' And when the people heard Ozma of Oz say this, they were glad and raised a great shout and said, 'We will do it. We will make the beasts of the forest of Gugu our slaves.' The wicked old gnome could say no more just then, for such a fierce roar of anger rose from the multitude of beasts that his voice was drowned by the clamor. Finally the roar died away like distant thunder, and Ruggedo the gnome went on with his speech. "Having heard the Oz people plot against your liberty, we watched to see what they would do, and saw them all begin making ropes long and short, with which to snare our friends the beasts. You are angry, but we also were angry, for when the Oz people became the enemies of the beasts, they also became our enemies, for we too are beasts, although we live in the sky. And my comrade and I said, 'We will save our friends and have revenge on the Oz people,' and so we came here to tell you of your danger and of our plan to save you." "We can save ourselves," said an old elephant. "We can fight."
"The Oz people are fairies, and you can't fight against magic unless you also have magic," answered the gnome.
"Tell us your plan," shouted the huge tiger,
and the other beasts echoed his words, crying,
"Tell us your plan."
"My plan is simple," replied Ruggedo. "By our magic we will transform all you animals into men and women like the Oz people, and we will transform all the Oz people into beasts. You can then live in the fine houses of the land of Oz, and eat the fine food of the Oz people, and wear their fine clothes, and sing and dance and be happy. And the Oz people, having become beasts, will have to live here in the forest and hunt and fight for food and often go hungry, as you now do, and have no place to sleep but a bed of leaves or a hole in the ground. Having become men and women, you beasts will have all the comforts you desire. And having become beasts, the Oz people will be very miserable. That is our plan. And if you agree to it, we will all march at once into the land of Oz and quickly conquer our enemies." When the stranger ceased speaking, a great silence fell on the assemblage, for the beasts were thinking of what he had said. Finally, one of the walruses asked,
"Can you really transform beasts into men and men into beasts?"
"He can, he can,"
cried Lou the unicorn, prancing up and down in an excited manner.
"He transformed me only last evening, and he can transform us all."
Gugu the king now stepped forward.
"You have heard the stranger speak," said he, "and now you must answer him. It is for you to decide. Shall we agree to this plan or not?"
"Yes," shouted some of the animals.
"No,"
shouted others, and some were yet silent.
Gugu looked around the great circle. "Take more time to think," he suggested. "Your answer is very important. Up to this time, we have had no trouble with the Oz people, but we are proud and
free
and never will become slaves. Think carefully, and when you are ready to answer, I will hear you."
End of chapter 11.
Chapter 12 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum.
This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Kiki uses his magic. Then arose a great confusion of sounds as all the animals began talking to their fellows. The monkeys chattered, and the bears growled, and the voices of the jaguars and lions rumbled, and the wolves yelped, and the elephants had to trumpet loudly to make their voices heard. Such a hubbub had never been known in the forest before, and each beast argued with his neighbor until it seemed the noise would never cease. Ruggedo the gnome waved his arms and fluttered his wings to try to make them listen to him again, but the beasts paid no attention. Some wanted to fight the Oz people, some wanted to be transformed, and some wanted to do nothing at all. The growling and confusion had grown greater than ever, when in a flash silence fell on all the beasts present. The arguments were hushed, and all gazed in astonishment at a strange sight. Far into the circle strode a great lion, bigger and more powerful than any other lion there, and on his back rode a little girl who smiled fearlessly at the multitude of beasts. And behind the lion and the little girl came another beast, a monstrous tiger, who bore upon his back a funny little man carrying a black bag. Right past the rows of wondering beasts the strange animals walked, advancing until they stood just before the rock throne of Gugu. Then the little girl and the funny little man dismounted, and the great lion demanded in a loud voice,
"Who is king in this forest?"
"I am," answered Gugu, looking steadily at the other. "I am Gugu the leopard, and I am king of this forest."
"Then I greet your majesty with great respect," said the lion. "Perhaps you have heard of me, Gugu. I am called the Cowardly Lion, and I am king of all beasts the world over."
Gugu's eyes flashed angrily.
"Yes," said he, "I have heard of you. You have long claimed to be king of beasts, but no beast who is a coward can be a king over me."
"He isn't a coward, your majesty," asserted the little girl. "He's just cowardly, that's all."
Gugu looked at her. All the other beasts were looking at her, too. "Who are you?" asked the king.
"Me? Oh, I'm just Dorothy," she answered.
"How dare you come here?" demanded the king.
"Why, I'm not afraid to go anywhere, if the Cowardly Lion is with me," she said. "I know him pretty well, and so I can trust him. He's always afraid when we get into trouble, and that's why he's cowardly. But he's a terrible fighter, and that's why he isn't a coward. He doesn't like to fight, you know, but when he has to, there isn't any beast living that can conquer him."
Gugu the king looked at the big, powerful form of the Cowardly Lion and knew she spoke the truth. Also the other lions of the forest now came forward and bowed low before the strange lion. "We welcome your majesty," said one. "We have known you many years ago, before you went to live at the Emerald City, and we have seen you fight the terrible Kalidas and conquer them, so we know you are the king of all beasts."
"It is true," replied the Cowardly Lion, "but I did not come here to rule the beasts of this forest. Gugu is king here, and I believe he is a good king and just and wise. I came with my friends to be the guest of Gugu, and I hope we are welcome."
That pleased the great leopard, who said very quickly,
"Yes, you at least are welcome to my forest. But who are these strangers with you?"
"Dorothy has introduced herself," replied the lion, "and you are sure to like her when you know her better. This man is the Wizard of Oz, a friend of mine who can do wonderful tricks of magic. And here is my true and tried friend, the Hungry Tiger, who lives with me in the Emerald City."
"Is he always hungry?" asked Loo the Unicorn.
"I am," replied the tiger, answering the question himself. "I am always hungry for fat babies."
"Can't you find any fat babies in Oz to eat?" inquired Loo the Unicorn.
"There are plenty of them, of course," said the tiger.
"But unfortunately I have such a tender conscience that it won't allow me to eat babies. So I'm always hungry for 'em, and never can eat 'em because my conscience won't let me."
Now of all the surprised beasts in that clearing, not one was so much surprised at the sudden appearance of these four strangers as Ruggedo the gnome. He was frightened, too, for he recognized them as his most powerful enemies, but he also realized that they could not know he was the former king of the gnomes because of the beast's form he wore, which disguised him so effectively. So he took courage and resolved that the wizard and Dorothy should not defeat his plans. It was hard to tell yet what the vast assemblage of beasts thought of the new arrivals. Some glared angrily at them, but more of them seemed to be curious and wondering. All were interested, however, and they kept very quiet and listened carefully to all that was said. Kiki Aru, who had remained unnoticed in the shadow of the rock, was at first more alarmed by the coming of the strangers than even Ruggedo was, and the boy told himself that unless he acted quickly and without waiting to ask the advice of the old gnome, their conspiracy was likely to be discovered, and all their plans to conquer and rule Oz be defeated. Kiki didn't like the way Ruggedo acted either, for the former king of the gnomes wanted to do everything his own way, and made the boy, who alone possessed the power of transformations, obey his orders as if he were a slave. Another thing that disturbed Kiki Aru was the fact that a real wizard had arrived, who was said to possess many magical powers, and this wizard carried his tools in a black bag, and was the friend of the Oz people, and so would probably try to prevent war between the beasts of the forest and the people of Oz. All these things passed through the mind of the high-up boy while the Cowardly Lion and Gugu the king were talking together, and that was why he now began to do several strange things. He had found a place near to the point where he stood, where there was a deep hollow in the rock. So he put his face into this hollow and whispered softly so he would not be heard, "I want the Wizard of Oz to become a fox, Pirzah Quixel." The wizard, who had stood smilingly beside his friends, suddenly felt his form change to that of a fox, and his black bag fall to the ground. Kiki reached out an arm and seized the bag, and the fox cried as loud as it could, "Treason! There's a traitor here with magic powers!" Everyone was startled at this cry, and Dorothy, seeing her old friend's plight, screamed and exclaimed, "Mercy me!" But the next instant the little girl's form had changed to that of a lamb with fleecy white wool, and Dorothy was too bewildered to do anything but look around her in wonder. The Cowardly Lion's eyes now flashed fire. He crouched low and lashed the ground with his tail, and gazed around to discover who the treacherous magician might be. But Kiki, who had kept his face in the hollow rock, again whispered the magic word, and the great lion disappeared, and in his place stood a little boy
dressed in Munchkin costume.
The little Munchkin boy was as angry as the lion had been, but he was small and helpless. Ruggedo the gnome saw what was happening and was afraid Kiki would spoil all his plans, so he leaned over the rock and shouted, "Stop, Kiki, stop!" Kiki would not stop, however. Instead, he transformed the gnome into a goose, to Ruggedo's horror and dismay. But the hungry tiger had witnessed all these transformations, and he was watching to see which of those present was to blame for them. When Ruggedo spoke to Kiki, the hungry lion knew that he was the magician, so he made a sudden spring and hurled his great body full upon the form of the Limon Eeg crouching against the rock. Kiki didn't see the tiger coming because his face was still in the hollow, and the heavy body of the tiger bore him to the earth just as he said, "Pirzah Quixel," for the fifth time. So now the tiger, which was crushing him, changed to a rabbit, and relieved of its weight, Kiki sprang up and, spreading his eagle's wings, flew into the branches of a tree where no beast could easily reach him. He was not an instant too quick in doing this, for Gugu the king had crouched on the rock's edge and was about to spring on the boy. From his tree Kiki transformed Gugu into a fat Gillikin woman, and laughed aloud to see how the woman pranced with rage and how astonished all the beasts were at their king's new shape. The beasts were frightened, too, fearing they would share the fate of Gugu, so a stampede began when Rango the gray ape sprang into the forest, and Brew the bear and Loo the unicorn followed as quickly as they could. The elephants backed into the forest, and all the other animals, big and little, rushed after them, scattering through the jungle until the clearing was far behind. The monkeys scrambled into the trees and swung themselves from limb to limb to avoid being trampled upon by the bigger beasts, and they were so quick that they distanced all the rest. A panic of fear seemed to have overtaken the forest people, and they got as far away from the terrible magician as they possibly could. But the transformed one stayed in the clearing, being so astonished and bewildered by their new shapes that they could only look at one another in a dazed and helpless fashion, although each one was greatly annoyed at the trick that had been played on him. "Who are you?" the Munchkin boy asked the rabbit, and "Who are you?" the fox asked the lamb, and "Who are you?" the rabbit asked the fat Gillikin woman.
"I'm Dorothy," said the woolly lamb.
"I'm the wizard," said the fox.
"I'm the cowardly lion," said the Munchkin boy.
"I'm the hungry tiger," said the rabbit.
"I'm Gugu the king," said the fat woman.
But when they asked the goose who he was, Ruggedo the gnome would not tell them.
"I'm just a goose," he replied, "and what I was before I cannot remember."
End of chapter 12.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.